Now, back to the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on more compelling talk radio, 1320 WILS.
It's 11:35 and we're back. We're talking with Rick Pruse from Pruse Pets about proper pet keeping when it comes to an aquarium and how we can start off. Rick, we talked about a four-step process, and before the break you had mentioned the issue of establishing the proper ecology and biology in the tank, and you also talked about not overfeeding. I know one of the other big issues, number three of the four steps, is the issue of properly cleaning the tank. Now, is it best to go through and scrub the algae and change the water out and vacuum the gravel? Or are you better off getting a plecostomus or a coolie loach or an actual creature to do those functions for you? How does that all work?
Well, both can be particularly helpful, but most essential would be doing those partial water changes. The water chemistry in your aquarium changes over time. Most people think of it as kind of a static fish living in the environment. Everything's okay. It's a more dynamic environment where over time, things change. And fish kind of acclimate to those changes. So what we never want to do is make any drastic change to your aquarium. We kind of have a rule of about 25% water changes using what's called a gravel siphon cleaner. Now, we have two types of gravel siphon cleaners, one that would drop into a bucket. And for those who want to make their life as easy as possible, we actually have one that can hook up to the sink and have no buckets involved. But one way or another, we actually use a tool that as it drops the water from the aquarium, it literally lifts and removes the organic residues from the bottom of the aquarium.
Right.
So that's probably single-handedly most important. We encourage you to do that once a week. You can do it maybe every other week, depending on the fish density and the overall basic water chemistry your water has. As far as those fish that are moving around the tank, like Pecostomus, they can be helpful at keeping the tank looking good, so you don't have to.
Right.
And I do encourage the right type of Pecostomus. But at the same time, if you had some live plants, you might choose a different candidate or at least a specialized Pecostomus that won't hurt your live plants. So a little extra advice might help.
Rick, I know that the fourth step is actually the one that seems like the most common sense, but it's actually one of the most important ingredients, and that is to make sure that you actually get a healthy fish. I mean, it's great if you have a good biology and you've got proper feeding levels and you're cleaning and changing the water, but if you don't put healthy fish in there, then you're kind of going to be facing a defeated purpose.
Yeah, you're right. And we get that. You know, at the store, we have the hut. And people that have water tests to be done come to the hut. When people have water chemistry issues, we find it there. When people have bad fish that has died, they come to the hut. And too often we find that when people go out and they actually buy an unhealthy fish and put it in their aquarium, it can commonly spread a disease throughout the entire aquarium and cause a problem. And what we find too often is that the probability of them getting an unhealthy fish is greatly heightened by just the consumer not understanding that there is a trade out there of tropical fish, and there's a stress associated with moving fish around. And when they go out to buy a fish and they don't know any better, if that fish is rather weary, you know, and they bring it home and it has a problem, they got an issue. So there's like just two simple ways in which somebody goes out to collect a fish from a retailer that they can actually tell whether or not they might even want to consider buying it. Or if they do buy it from a place that isn't quite, you know, up to standard, they might want to set up a separate tank and isolate it themselves. So the two things that you're looking for when you go out and buy a fish is that the fish have been properly quarantined or isolated before sale. The reality is, and we talked about this on one other show when we talked about the Florida fish farmers, you know, and how fish are shipped from Florida to here or from, and now it's more of a Southeast Asian market where they now have 50% of the traffic. So they produce them over there in the Far East, and then they have to ship them somehow miraculously into our store. So the reality is when the fish come in the back door, they aren't necessarily in the best of condition. What a store has to do, no matter where the store is they need to isolate those incoming fish from the fish that are going out the front door. And the easiest way to do that is to have an isolation or quarantine procedure or approach. So you can just go into a store and ask the rank and file person that's ready to dip up a fish, when the fish come in, where do they go? you know, and if they're just going in with the fish that they already have, that's probably an opportunity to kind of say, okay, I got to isolate or quarantine my own fish.
Right. And Rick, when people are thinking, you mentioned starting out, you don't want to have too many fish in the tank because you're building this more delicate environment for them. But at some point, you're going to want to add fish. When should people add additional fish? And how do they know what breeds they can mix together in order to have a copacetic tank where all the fish get along with each other and are good for each other?
Once that aquarium is established, once we've gone through that biological stability, once we don't see any ammonia or nitrite readings, the crazy thing is it seems like it's ready to have almost a full complement of fish. So that's not the limitation. What might be the limitation is the variety of fish you put in there. I always encourage a customer to go around and find fish that are appropriately sized for their tank. I don't recommend any fish that's going to outgrow their tank. Back in the old days, Plecostomus, the ones that were sold commonly on the trade would all get about a foot and a half to 2 feet long, and nobody actually had a tank capable of keeping them for a period of time. So now we have like the bristlenose Plecostomus, which works real well. But my point is that what you want to do is find a couple, three fish that you think you really want to center your tank around, and then find fish that will get along with those particular candidates. And obviously, it's important to go to a place that actually knows the compatibility. Or if they don't know the compatibility, at least do your research on those fish animals before you put them in the aquarium.
Right. Rick, one of the other issues I've always known is that when you're putting together the aquarium, one of the big issues is that the fish need somewhere to hide. They need the ability to get away from other fish. And I've seen where you've really built some very creative methods for doing that. How important is that in building the tank? And are there particular types of fish where it becomes almost critical for their success and survival?
Well, that's good to ask. And I think that, why are you doing this? You know, why are you having an aquarium? You're not having it to be a box where fish go back and forth and you can look at them. You really want these fish to go in their environment. You want them to feel comfortable. And actually, if you want those fish to be out and enjoy your company, you need to have like their homes there that they can kind of live into. So you need the plants and decorations for them to hide in. Plus, I mean, when you make a nice little medieval scene or a Roman architecture, or if you have this natural setting with plants, when you sit that in your living room, that's what you're doing it for. You're not doing it just to keep fish in a box. You're doing it so that they can feel comfortable in your living room and you can sit down and enjoy them. So actually, decorating an aquarium is a fun art. There's a girl that's in one of our staff members, one of the actual managers of the freshwater department. Her name's Shelby. She takes this to all new levels. She could give you any advice you want, but if you ever see one of her masterpieces, it's just like, wow. I'm there with this like medieval setting, or I'm there with this fantasy land. I'm there with whatever it is that she's trying to create. It really makes it. And there's other staff members too. There's other staff members there that will make like a natural aquarium. It's your imagination. It's you thinking about what does this world look like to you, and then that's what you axolize.
Right. And with it being your 28th anniversary, I know that you've got a number of aquariums that are for sale. And I guess all we can recommend to people is that before you pick the size of aquarium, pick those main fish that you want to have and how big you want them to get. And then you can really build the environment that suits your particular wants and needs. Great conversation, Rick. Thank you so much for helping share that with the listeners so that they know how to build their aquarium, because it is a really, really fun, neat way of decorating your home and really identifying well with nature. We've been talking with Rick Pruse, our co-host and the owner of Pruse Pets in Old Town in Lansing, here on the Mid-Michigan Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS. Rick, in our last segment, we're going to talk with a couple of young ladies who have written a book or pieces of a book, Pets Across America, and they're using it in order to help generate some funds for some rescues. We're going to talk with them next here on the Pet Expert Talk Show on 1320 WILS.
You're beautiful.